Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Welcome back, everybody, here on Post Wrestling. It is John Pollock and a very special guest joining us today, all the way over the ocean himself, the undisputed British heavyweight champion himself, returning to Post Wrestling, Michael Oku. How are you today, Michael?
I'm doing good, John. Yeah. It's good to finally catch up after a few years. Yeah, really nice to be back.
It has been a while since we last spoke with you, and I was thinking about that in preparation for this interview. It was right after the second match with Will Ospreay, and now that it's been all these years removed, you guys have since had the rematch. Do you view that match as sort of a big coming out party for you when it came to just more worldwide acclaim? And like, how do you contextualize that match specific from January 2022?
Yeah, well, when I think about January 2022 and what was going on in the UK scene, we were just fresh of coming off from the pandemic, or well, the world was, of course, in 2021. And I feel like there was a lot of questions about what the health of the scene was, like what kind of health level, what was happening in the UK. And there wasn't really a lot of talk about what was going on in the UK indies. And then when that match happened, people would pay attention to a Will Ospreay match that would happen here and there. But then when that match happened, it got so much attention and attraction. And I feel like it began to make people around the world look at the UK and be like, oh, maybe there is something happening. Maybe there are people that we don't know about. But for me personally, yeah, 100%, that definitely changed things. And basically, I can look at that and see it as a takeoff point for all the things I now later done in and around the world.
How do you sort of assess the UK scene, as it were, since the pandemic? Obviously, speaking out had a big impact on the scene as well. As we fast forward to today, what would you kind of categorize the status of the health and you being a big part of the scene over there?
I mean, I currently say that it's very healthy. I think we're back to it being at a healthy state. We've been rebuilding. And I think a big part of that is, you know, it's pro wrestling. So a way to make things hot is to make wrestlers get hot, so you need to build new stars, create new stars. And I think we've done a good job, not just in UK but around Europe, to make wrestling an excited place to go. We've created new fans and not just brought back old fans of the indie scene here. Not only are things doing well up in, you know, just London, local to where I am, in England, but France is doing amazing. There's good things happening in Germany, of course, with WXW. They've been doing amazing 16-carat weekenders, and then they've been packed. So it's really cool to see that. And in fact, France is one I'd even love to highlight, because I don't think people were even talking about it before the pandemic as a hot country where there's some good wrestlers and talented wrestlers. So it's fun and it's exciting to see a new hot spot for pro wrestling and huge stars emerging. So yeah, I'm really positive about how things are at the moment.
So the match that occurs in 2022, you guys don't go back to the rematch until just over a year ago. And I would love to know sort of just the emotions you had going into that rematch, where I imagine the expectation level had to be so high among the audience of not just wanting to see a great match. This audience wanted to see one of the greatest matches ever. What was sort of your headspace going into that rematch and knowing what was, you know, a very tall task to replicate a match that now had 2 years to really simmer in everyone's memories from the previous match that you two put forward?
100%. I think that was the thing I was most nervous about. Going into the match we had in 2022, there was excitement about it, but it was primarily excitement on a Will Ospreay match. And so I had the nerves on that match of having to live up to a Will Ospreay standard match, the standards of a Will Ospreay match. Whereas this one, now people, I had now grown my reputation and that match had earned its own reputation. So yeah, now we're trying to match that. And that was my thinking. I was like, if we can at least match it in terms of quality, then that's a victory. And for so many people leaving that to say that we topped it, and I feel that we did, it was just a super duper bonus. But yeah, that was probably the most nervous I've been recently for a wrestling match, just because of that, like you said, the weight of expectation had never been heavier. And then hearing news about, oh yeah, by the way, Tony Khan's coming to see this match. He wants to see it. And it's Will Ospreay's final independent wrestling match before he goes on to AEW. So there's all these added elements. And here he is with me. I'm the one chosen to have this match with him. And it's one that makes sense to a lot of fans. The pressure was there, but I feel like I lived up to it.
Are you a guy that typically, for especially some of your bigger matches that you're having a lot of, are you someone that does experience a lot of those nerves in the lead up? And once you're out there in the ring, is that do you sense like a shift that occurs once you're just in the flow of things and it's just you're doing what you are here to do?
For me, I feel very relaxed. Even backstage, I'm generally very relaxed, especially when I've got the match down, and the nerves kick crazily, legitimately, like a minute before my music hits. That's like, oh, there it is. There it is. There's the fears. There's now the worries that this is going to be horrible and it's all going to go wrong. It just hits me all in a quick rush. Then I go through the curtain and I feel relaxed and I feel confident again. And I feel like I can take on the world. So I don't know why that is, but that just seems to be the pattern most often than not with my matches.
I'd be remiss not to mention the fact that, you know, as much as the focus was on yourself and Ospreay in both of those matches, your partner Amira Blair was so critical to that presentation and seemed to get a lot of that attention that people noted, like the physicality and just so many people focused. It wasn't just like this great match. It was this great presentation, like from start to finish, and Amira being a big part of that. And I think showing you the value of that role and how you two incorporated her into these various matches as well.
Yeah, 100%. She's a big part of as why those matches are so memorable, and she played her role brilliantly both times. It's interesting how, like, the first time she was kind of my partner who was on the other side of the guardrail, and then there was physicality involved. And this time, you know, we'd already had a year of her being officially my manager, and you know, managers are few and far between in all of professional wrestling, let alone the indies. So what I think she's really done a great job of is carving that niche for herself, for, you know, a babyface manager as well, which again is something that we're navigating, of being an act that's, you know, we're two babyfaces, but there's a manager there. How do we make things different? Who do we take from history? Which again, it's hard to find examples and archetypes of that, but I think she's done a great job of doing all that research, doing that work to try and make the role her own. And then, of course, not being afraid in the slightest to get stuck in or involved in something that helps the story of the match.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do-it-yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from Post Wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/postwrestling.
Who are any of those influences that she's drawn upon, or both of you have looked at as kind of, you know, templates that are maybe not replicated as often in today's scene?
Well, of course, I mean, we'll watch whatever's current, and whoever is doing managing, that will be someone who she'll be taking influence from. So she will be taking influence from a Paul Heyman. She will be taking influence from an MVP. But I think the best way, if I was to just elevate a pitch who she is as manager, I would say it's a mix between Miss Elizabeth and Sherry Martel, mm-hmm. where Miss Elizabeth had the elegance to her, but didn't get as stuck in and physical the way that Sherry Martel did, and wasn't as, you know, Sherry Martel was known for being a confident talker, and that wasn't something that Miss Elizabeth was known for. And I think there's been countless examples of Amira busting out some really cool promos that has added to the story and added to my act, as well as any match that I'm involved in. So the mix between Miss Elizabeth and Sherry is the easiest thing for us to point at and say, that's who Amira Blair is as a manager.
You just recently noted your 8th anniversary of your first match. Do you look at yourself, like, among the locker room now? Do you see yourself as a veteran in the locker room at this point? Or are there other aspects that's like, man, I'm not even a decade into this yet?
It's both. It really is both. It feels like so much time has passed and then none has at all. And when I do look around at, you know, locker rooms that I'm in around the UK scene, and the fact that there's people who are just a couple of years in, and people who are not even, many people, by the way, who are not even 20 years old, it's a scary thought to think about. But as well as the fact that, you know, I've also had so much experiences in those 8 years, which feels now like a very short amount of time, with so many top wrestlers of the world, like being in the ring with Shingo and Minoru Suzuki, as well as, of course, Will Ospreay, Chris Jericho. There's like top names. Pac was a huge help for my career, and ELP. I want to at least share that knowledge, if not just with my words, but then just with them wrestling me, they'll just, through kind of wrestling osmosis, will pick up things that I've then picked up from them. So I kind of see it as a duty to do that, to pass down that kind of knowledge that I was fortunate enough in a short space of time to obtain.
It's interesting when you look at how much the industry is changing, when you have two really dominant promotions in the US, and there's probably another scenario where, you know, you're a year or two in and NXT UK is getting underway and an offer comes. It's very hard for a talent to look at that and say, no, I think I'm not ready yet. And you look at all the experiences you've had in these 8 years, going to Mexico, going all over the place, headlining, which I think is a great experience that you can't replicate. But it's almost like that window is going to get a lot shorter when talent are being offered big contracts so early in their careers.
You know, this is a conversation that's been coming up a lot in amongst like wrestlers and promoters, and I've been talking with people. And it's just so interesting how much independent wrestling has changed from, let's just say, I think people talk about the golden years of like the 2000s and 2010s compared to now, where I think back then there was the one true game in town of WWE where you can make the quote unquote real money. And they wanted a certain kind of wrestler that wrestled a certain kind of style that looked a certain way. But what that did is it left loads and loads of wrestlers kind of like misfit toys that just had to ply their trade on the indies. And they're like, okay, it's WWE's never going to happen, so PWG is going to be my pinnacle. These places, these indies are going to be my pinnacle, and that's going to be my career. Then all of a sudden, WWE just decided, you know what, actually, we want the indie wrestlers. We need these indie wrestlers who have now got 15 years of experience having some of the best matches and being known as the best wrestlers in the world. Whereas now, like you said, because of, you know, there's now two games in town that are competing with each other with everything, you know, with ratings, with attendance gates, and with talent. It seems now that even if you have, like, show a bit of potential, that's going to be a reason for them to at least give you a tryout or to sign you outright. So it's tempting to take that offer. In fact, it's very difficult to say no, like you said. But I think what we're seeing now is, you know, you can't sign everyone, which means that it's going to allow these scenes that we're creating and these wrestlers to get better on the scene and to mature and to just to become a more complete wrestler. Because I know personally, that's what I would like to do. I mean, I always feel like I'm ready for whatever's next, but at the same time, I know I can get better. And I want to know that if I take another step, or the next step, so to speak, that I'm as complete a wrestler as possible.
One of those names, obviously, that you're always so linked to that we just mentioned is Will Ospreay. Kind of watching from afar, you know, going in, I don't think anyone had any question about, you know, the level of wrestling a Will Ospreay was bringing to AEW. But are there other aspects of his game that have surprised you, of just how well he's transferred to weekly U.S. television?
I think the promos are something that, I think that's what's getting him over just as much as his wrestling.
I think 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not that he wasn't known to be, I mean, amongst us, the UK wrestlers or the UK fans, he was known to be a confident talker. But to see that translate onto American television, you don't know how things are going to translate on television. And I think what he's done a good job of is seeming authentic. When he talks, he sounds authentic, he feels authentic. And as a babyface, that's the gold mine. That's what you're looking for, authenticity. So for that to be a really strong point, and now he can talk people into the building and into his matches that are then, you know, S-tier matches, I think that's what's helping him be like head and shoulders above so many in and around the world, and let alone in AEW.
When just the last thing on the final match that you guys had just over a year ago, when you saw the number of stars attached to that match afterwards, did you need a magnifying glass to make it look that there were six of them there? And how big of an impact is that for someone like you when you get, a distinguished outlet like the newsletter that a lot of people are focused upon and being so highly rated like that? Like, do you see a tangible effect from something like that?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think I probably told you even, you know, when you asked about the 5-star rating about it, I saw evidence of it affecting my career very quickly and more people reaching out to me and being interested in me. And I think that's the same thing that happened again with that match, when there's so many people that wanted to see it, that saw it. It was being clipped immediately because it aired live and was being streamed live. And then for it to get that 6-star rating, which again, there's still a short list of match, I mean a super duper short list of matches that have got 6 stars or above, it's very surreal. Sometimes it's just hilarious to me, but I will never complain about someone saying that they like my wrestling. And it's also very refreshing, I don't know, but in my opinion, I think it's also very refreshing that someone who isn't very young and grew up on wrestling from like the 70s and 80s actually thinks that modern wrestling is good. That is a breath of fresh air. And him and Dave being high on that match and high on so many matches that he sees now in this day and age, it's very cool.
We will get up to some modern stuff and what's coming up this summer for you. But just going back a couple of months, you did set down upon Las Vegas for WrestleMania week. And I think you clocked in 6 matches that week. Was this your first like WrestleMania week, like really hitting the schedule and having this impact of just, you know, working for a bunch of different companies and also, you know, coming over in front of a U.S. audience as well for, you know, a lot of eyes on that particular week's shows?
That's definitely the most I've done. That's the most I've wrestled in a short space of time ever. You know, I've done the Mania weeks. I mean, I think the 2022 WrestleMania week in Texas was the first time I was asked to come down, and I had a few matches there. But I mean, I was indeed looking for a combination of quantity and quality, because I wanted to make noise. I wanted to get people's attention. As an independent wrestler, that's paramount. So to find promotions that I think I pretty much had worked for all of them in the past. DPW would have been the newest one, and New Texas Pro I wouldn't have done. But I just had to connect with promotions that I'd worked with before, and they wanted to bring me in, and Deadlock also, and New Texas had been wanting to bring me in the past. but it all just lined up as the perfect time to be like, you know what, I'm going to find a way to do all of them. And then, of course, starting off that week with Ring of Honor in Boston the day before Vegas, that just added to the noise that I was aiming to make.
Now, did you stick around at the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Show? Did you get to see Minoru Suzuki and Butterbean in person?
Well, I was the match after, you know.
Oh, sorry, you guys came after that one. Wow,
I had to follow it. Yeah,
that was quite the match to follow. Yes.
yeah. Well, there was a screen backstage. So
was it a sellout at the monitor backstage?
I was looking at what I was seeing, and I was like, oh, okay, all right. It was a very special show to be part of. It's a history-making show, a history-making match, to say the very least.
Sometimes you got to take chances with matchmaking. Some work, some don't, but yeah.
I respect it.
So as you, there was the note in the Observer a couple of weeks ago about yourself at Amira securing U.S. visas. Is that the case? And I'm kind of curious, if so, what that process is like to go through, the amount of time to secure a U.S. visa.
That's 100% the case. Myself and Amira, we have U.S. visas now. We got the visas a few months ago, and that's what helped us with getting the bookings in Vegas, as well as getting the gig at Ring of Honor. It's an arduous process. It's just a lot of forms, to be honest with you. It's just a lot of forms, a lot of paperwork. I'll give a shout out to Progress Wrestling. They were helpful with the visa process as well. And it's just something where we saw as an opportunity of like, okay, this is something that we've had so much interest from US promotions that we want to strike on it. And we want to do a combination. I mean, where we are super busy in Europe already, we got so much bookings in Europe, but we want to find the spaces we have to find valuable and really cool, interesting matches, opponents, and promotions to work for in the US. So, yeah, we've got a visa, and we're looking to use it.
Is it fair to say that at this point you are not under contract to like an AEW or any US-based promotion?
Yeah, no, that's correct. We're not under contract. So which is why it's very cool that, again, we've been brought down many times by, you know, AEW, and we've worked with them. But yeah, not contracted, but we have a visa.
Would you be prepared, like, if that contract comes your way, would you be looking to uproot yourself, move to the US, or would you look at the Will Ospreay weekly flight itinerary that it's I think that's an aspect of Will Ospreay that no one can truly appreciate beyond wrestlers, of the amount of time in the air this man is spending on a weekly basis.
Yeah. That's arguably the worst part of traveling abroad and going overseas. It's just those flights. So for him to be doing that pretty much weekly is I don't know how to do it. So if when it comes to myself in the mirror, I think we've spoken about it, that we're open to uprooting if it needs be. We're not like stuck in our heads being like, we need to stay here, we need to stay in the UK. So yeah, we're open to even living in the US if that's what's needed.
So it's a pretty big summer coming up for RevPro. You guys have the Summer Sizzler show coming up on July 25th. It's going to be yourself and Ricky Knight Jr. And then two nights at Crystal Palace for the 13th anniversary show. That'll be Forbidden Door weekend, which is happening at the O2 Arena. I would imagine that you will have a very prominent position on one or if not both of those nights at Crystal Palace.
Yeah, of course. Like I'm hoping that like that is another huge weekend for RevPro, not just for professional wrestling. It always heats up in the physical sense of the actual weather, as well as like the big matches that start coming along. Of course, like you said, Summer Sizzlers in a couple of weeks time at Wolverhampton. Mercedes Moné will be on the show. Bushi and Naito's very first independent appearance will be at that show. So there's a huge show before the two big shows and the anniversary show. And we, you know, well, Andy of RevPro, the RevPro promoter, he always tries to make sure that he gives the fans the best matches possible. If not just a banger that's just announcing like, here's a really cool match, come and see it, then it's either one with a really, really good story. So we'll have like Shah Samuels, who run the Revolution Rumble and was the first ever British heavyweight champion. He said he's going to challenge for the title at the anniversary show. And if he loses, he'll retire. So there's already a title versus career match that's been penciled in. Whether it's against me or Ricky, we'll find out who that will be at the end of Summer Sizzler. So yeah, very excited for RevPro's next couple months. And again, Forbidden Door's in town. I think WWE's in town as well. It's very funny that week, WWE and AEW are in Europe that week. And hey, that's a positive for professional wrestling fans and arguably professional wrestlers.
How would you describe just the relationship between promoter and wrestler with yourself and Andy? I mean, here is somebody that just, you know, seems to have been able to, you know, produce a product that, you know, you guys are drawing like 1,000 fans for a show. And that's like a real achievement in today's like independent scene. What is it specific about Andy that clicks really well with you?
I really do think that he's trying to put on the best product possible with the best wrestlers that he can get. And there's a freedom. I mean, there's a freedom in general with independent wrestling, but there's a freedom there and out of trust for his wrestlers to go out there and basically just go for it and kill it. And that's what we all try and do. We always try and everybody is competing backstage to have the best match. We're of that mindset. It's such an indie mindset of like, if we all just try and have the best match, then the whole show will be good because everybody's trying to have the best match instead of like maybe pulling back to save for other matches. And that formula seems to have worked for most RevPro shows. And I think it then draws that attention from the crowd. And I feel that's why it draws the best out of any promotion. I think for a top promotion, it probably runs the most. Most top indie promotions will run once a month at best here in the UK. But there's a RevPro show nearly, I want to say, once a week. And then he's trying his best to explore other avenues in terms of doing shows in Barcelona. He's announced a show in Lyon, going to Germany. So we're also expanding and going across Europe. It's not just WWE. It's not just AEW. It's going around Europe. It's also RevPro as well. So that's why I think like RevPro's worked so well. It's just prioritizing, putting on like a good wrestling show that you can trust will be a good wrestling show. And it kind of stays in the box. It doesn't try to go outside the box and do something different. It's like wrestling's on the marquee, and that's what you're getting when you come along.
Last thing here, AEW obviously has a huge week leading up to their All in Texas show on Saturday. They have Supercard of Honor on Friday night. Are you going to be in Texas this week?
Well, there's a lot of shows happening in Texas. So, again, we're talking about having a working US visa, and there's a lot of indie promotions that are coming into town for All in Texas. So, you know,
you might be doing some sightseeing in Texas.
I might be doing some sightseeing. There's a lot of friends that I have in Texas, so maybe I'll be there. And listen, Omega vs. Okada is there, so who knows? Maybe I want to see that in person. We'll see.
Michael Oku, not only the undisputed British heavyweight champion, but also a master of the tees as well. So, Michael, it's been too long. I always enjoy sitting down and chatting with you. All of your socials, you can follow him, the OJMO. And if you're in Texas or watching anything this week, I mean, keep an eye open. Maybe Michael Oku will be popping by, maybe just with some binoculars and appearing at any of these venues, possibly. But we want to wish you all the best. Of course, Summer Sizzler is coming up on July 25th, and then two nights at Crystal Palace, August 22nd, 23rd, over Forbidden Door weekend, as WWE and AEW are descending upon England. But Michael, all the best moving forward. I think you're doing just great work. And I think like you're a kind of template for a lot of younger wrestlers to be looking at as like a great way of like navigating a system that is changing on a yearly basis, it seems.
Thank you. No, I'm trying my best. I really am trying my best. I'm trying to figure it out as I go along too. So I appreciate being on again, and like, you know, you're always great to talk to. And yeah, maybe we'll wait a short period of time before we do it again.
All right, we'll continue the Michael Oku Chronicles here at Post Wrestling. But thanks as always to everybody for listening. You can follow all along at postwrestling.com.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.